From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past Friday when President Joe Biden finally sat down for a one-on-one interview after his disastrous debate performance 8 days prior. After that debate, Biden's team said that he had had a cold and that he might still be jet-lagged. And some said he has good days and bad days, and this was simply a bad day. And then Biden's press team suggested that he was sick. Everyone close to Biden was simply denying that what we saw was the natural decline of an 81-year-old man who has had the most stressful job in the world for 4 years. And yet, if Biden is as sharp as he says he is, as sharp as Vice President Harris says he is during private meetings, then why wait 8 days to do a single 20-minute interview? Why not come out the next day or the day after that and do a 2-hour open news conference, take all questions? The president told ABC News' George Stephanopoulos that he had been exhausted at the debate, and his doctors tested him for COVID. And then Biden said that no one is going to tell him not to run for re-election. He said he would only listen to God, and if God descended from the heavens to instruct him not to run, well, that would be the sign he needed to drop out. Meanwhile, a growing list of Democratic leaders are coming out publicly to say that Biden should not be on the ticket. One of them, according to multiple reports today, is Congressman Joe Morelli. They are motivated by the polling, which is collapsing for President Biden. The New Yorker's Isaac Chotiner published a conversation with Nate Cohn of the New York Times today, who says that President Biden's advantages do not show up in the polls. He's an incumbent. Inflation has subsided in many ways. The economy, imperfect as it is getting better. And he has a historically unpopular opponent in Donald Trump. And yet Biden is in trouble in the polls. And Cohn says Biden's approval rating alone is an indication that he would need some kind of unprecedented turnaround to even have a chance in November. Biden has said he does not care, that he does not believe the polling. Last week, we had a panel who made the case that it's essentially too late for Democrats to change course. Today, our guests make the opposite case, that changing course is urgent, even necessary. Let me welcome our panel this hour. On the line with us is Tyler Austin Harper, Assistant Professor of Environmental Studies at Bates College and a contributing writer to The Atlantic. Tyler, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
In studio, Jerry Lynn Sparks is a former congressional press secretary and founder of the Riga Democrats. It wasn't always the smoothest experience in Congress. She wrote a book in part about that. Jerry, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Anita Smith-Twitchell, who's a former member of Canandaigua City Council and president of Rochester Area Mensa. Hello, Anita.
Thank you for having me.
And Dylan Daler is a Democratic political consultant. Dylan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Let me start with you, Tyler. You've been maybe the most consistently vocal critic of Biden staying in this race in my social feeds since debate night. And today you wrote, quote, "A sure sign that the hardcore riding with Biden crowd is rapidly dissolving into a political cult is that they talk about loyalty more and more and about winning less and less," end quote. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, I've been really disturbed as a left-leaning Democrat myself, really disturbed by what seems to me the Trumpian overtones of some of Biden's most loyal defenders who, like the president, are increasingly taking a line that, you know, the polls are fake. I have seen Biden people and surrogates, you know, describe the media as out to get him, and even using words like sedition and treason. And they talk frequently about loyalty when this should be a question about, you know, who is a candidate most fit to win an election against a man that many of us agree is, you know, a really dangerous political figure. So I've just been deeply disturbed by what seems to me to be, like I said, a sort of Trumpian playbook that is being applied by a certain corner of the pro-Biden Democratic Party.
Well, let me look at some of the recent comments made by a Biden 2020 delegate who has been making some of those allegations that you just described. Christopher Hale says that the movement to dump Biden is just a bunch of white men. Hale wrote, quote, "Nine House Democrats out of 213 have called for President Biden to suspend his campaign. None of them are black," end quote. Tyler, as a black man yourself who is sometimes confused for a white man, what do you make of the focus on race here?
Yeah, no, I find it to be completely Orwellian that we are expected to believe, and this is something you hear a lot, that we are expected to believe that it is in fact racist for people to call an old white man who seems to be losing a step to be replaced by a younger black woman, right? And that's what we're expected to believe. I see this line trotted out a lot. I think it's designed to prey on you know, liberal folks' reasonable fears of being racist. But the idea that it's racist or selling out the black community to advocate for a younger black woman to take on Biden's role, particularly when he promised to be a one-term president, I find that to be the height of gaslighting. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of black folks that support Biden and that want him to reign in the race. I'm equally sure that there are plenty that don't. And I'm overwhelmingly sure that most black Americans, you know, just want to see Trump defeated at the ballot box and are, you know, will be enthusiastically supportive of whatever candidates, you know, best equipped to do that.
Jerry Lynn Sparks, you've worked for a member of Congress and you've written about ego and power and the desperate desire to hold on to that power. I mean, do you think that's what you're seeing with this president?
I don't think it's true ego. I think it is a misguided sense of duty to country. I do believe that he has his heart in the right place, but I think he's living in an echo chamber, and there's people who love him and are enabling him. And real love of country is listening to people who are not in your cheering section. These are people that are giving it to you straight. And yesterday I had this thing happen to me I wanted to bring up. I was driving on this rural road in Livonia, and this car came at me and crossed the center line. It was right in my lane. And I thought about that this morning. Keeping Biden at the top of our ticket is driving democracy off a cliff, and the car's coming right at us. I am young enough that I had the reflexes, and I went around. We don't have that in our current leader. He has done a wonderful job. Thank you for your service for decades to our country. Now to serve our country, you need to let the best ticket win. And that's real love of country, letting something go so that it's not about winning an election, Evan. It's about saving democracy. And I really do mean that without any strain of hyperbole.
Anita, how do you see it?
So I think that we can cut through this pretty simply and say that it's going to be a binary when we get to the election, and that we can either entrust ourselves to a coalition of educated and formally trained and, you know, well put together individuals with a love of country at their, what I assume is a love of country at the center point of what they're trying to do. And, you know, people that are credentialed, people that have the bona fides that says that they are of sound mind, they are sober minded, they are a large and diverse coalition of different thinkers. That's what the Democratic Party is supposed to represent. And those people should be entrusted with this country, regardless of who's at the top of the ticket. Those are the people that need to be in charge of righting this ship. I don't care what kind of situation we are in. There is no situation in which a Donald Trump presidency with his coalition bozo show is going to be better for this country and better under difficult times than a coalition by a Democratic Party. Thank you. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard for me to elaborate because, you know, I like to see things from sort of a 1,000-foot view, and I'm looking down at this and saying, we're arguing over who's better for the black vote. The black vote is going to come out for the same coalition that they came out for. They're going to come out for his picks. They're going to come out for her picks, because it's going to be him or Kamala. There's no other. If you're hoping for like some dark horse candidate to come in, I have sad news for you. The only people that can pick up that campaign contribution money are going to be Kamala or Joe Biden. So those are your picks. And as a voting populace, it is up to us to resign ourselves to that fact. First of all, come to God, come to Jesus or whatever about that. And then decide that you're going to choose the will of the people over the creeping and encroachment of corporate fascism. I'm sorry. That's about it.
Okay. Dylan, how do you see it?
You know, I think Joe Biden has been one of the most transformative presidents since Lyndon Johnson. He has assembled a great team. I was a big fan of Ron Klain when he was the chief of staff. I think that they've passed great legislation, but the job of running for president is very different from the job of being president. It is exhausting. The job of running any campaign is exhausting, and having to traverse, 50 states, not really, more like maybe 15 states, and bus tours, interviews, is something that a candidate needs to be able to do. And it's a little worrying post-debate to see Joe Biden not really engaging the media the way that we would expect him to.
But Dylan, maybe he does. So his campaign, let me just try to take his campaign's view here. They may say what you just described is what a typical presidential candidate may have to do. He is one of the most well-known political quantities ever in American politics. He doesn't have to do the interviews that you talked about. He doesn't have to do the barnstorming. People know him. They know he's a known quantity. So it's a different kind of campaign, and he'll do less of it. But they know who he is, and they know what they're voting for. What would you say to that?
I mean, it's an argument that's made, but I think at the same time, you know, Barack Obama was kicking off a two-day bus tour of Ohio at this point back in 2012, and he was the president of the United States, very well known. I don't think that people were unaware of him. You know, Joe Biden needs to change the discourse at this point post-debate. And we're kind of falling into, you know, I understand that it was the 4th of July and it's difficult because you can't really do interviews. People aren't going to pay attention. But you can't fall into this many days of, is Joe Biden going to be the nominee?
So I want to read a comment that came from a listener and ask all of our guests to kind of respond to this. This is the strongest case that this can't happen. Here it is. The listener says, I do not, practically speaking, see how this is possible to replace him. There is no heir apparent. There isn't some primary candidate with a war chest and name recognition to fall back on. There is this layman's idea that we can replace Joe with any Democrat and the party will just fall in line. As if a party that simultaneously contains Joe Manchin and AOC will be like, yeah, I'm cool with whoever this is. And it is presumably not the black woman whose literally job it is to be the backup president. Everyone will just be fine leapfrogging her. That situation does not exist. We will tear ourselves to pieces, regardless of who it is. Makes no difference if it's Joe or anyone else. At least Joe has $100 million and a campaign infrastructure. End quote. So let me start with Tyler. What do you make of what you just heard? And I want you to also make sure that we understand your view of this idea that, you know, and you heard Anita say it. It's Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, period, the end. Ezra Klein believes it could be an open convention. Other Democrats have made the case it could be an open convention, that there's a lot of Democrats who, in a short amount of time, could pick up the name recognition, would be the hottest political story in the country, and that would be something fresh and different. Well, this anonymous writer says no chance it's going to be Joe or Kamala Harris, and it's got to be Joe. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, so I certainly don't agree with that. I am agnostic as to whether it should be Kamala or an open convention. My view is basically that the American public is deeply dispirited that these are our choices. I think polls across the board show that nobody wanted this particular rematch. And I think we are currently underpricing the fact that it would be a shot in the arm to have any younger candidate in this race to vote for other than the two aging men that we have before us. Now, as to the question about, you know, the practical matter of replacing Biden, I have less than no patience for this argument. I understand that there are logistical questions, but we elected a very old man to office, knowing full well that, not to be morbid, but that he could die at any moment, right? And so it was always a possibility that Kamala would need to take over the reins. It was always a possibility that Biden was not going to be the nominee for 2024 and that a change to that effect could come suddenly and abruptly. If Biden were to, God forbid, drop dead tomorrow, we would figure out how to get Kamala in or whatever candidate and try to beat Trump at the ballot box. So I just think that line of thinking is disingenuous and entirely ridiculous. There's a separate point I would like to make on that front, which is there is a question of political math and who could win. And that question is really important. But there's also a question of responsible governance. And these are two different questions. You know, we are currently embroiled in a number of overseas conflicts, at least one of which is with a nuclear power in Russia. We have China and the Taiwan situation on the back burner. And it is overwhelmingly and profoundly irresponsible to ask the American public to accept the idea that a man that seems to be showing obvious signs of cognitive decline is going to wield the nuclear briefcase in a moment of global turmoil. That's just unacceptable to me. I think it will be unacceptable to many Americans. And I think in addition to having a responsibility to Democrats to put our best candidate forward, I think we also have a responsibility to the American people to put a candidate forward who he can honestly say is capable of shepherding our country through a moment that is, fraught with a lot of challenges.
Okay, so two brief follow-ups here, and then I'll kick it to our panel in studio. Your colleague at The Atlantic, Tyler Graham Wood, wrote today that what he would like to see President Biden do is actually resign the presidency now and let the vice president run as an incumbent and govern. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree with that, and I've been saying the same thing for a while. I think there's the case to be made that he needs to withdraw his candidacy is that he's too old and showing obvious signs of cognitive decline. If he is too old and showing obvious signs of cognitive decline such that he can't be the candidate, I think that also means that he's not qualified for office. I think what we saw at the debate was a man who is not capable of thinking on his feet, stringing together coherent sentences. In the event of a nuclear crisis, the president has 6 minutes to make a decision about how to respond in kind. And the idea that the candidate we saw on that debate stage is capable of waking up in the middle of the night and within 6 minutes making a decision on which the future of the human race hangs is laughable and stretches credulity. And so I absolutely think he needs to resign, both, again, for that responsible governance question, but also because I think, it sounds like Graham's suggesting, that does leave Kamala at least a few months to be operating as the incumbent, to show the country that she can lead, and to get her message out there. So I'm in full agreement with that.
Okay, but the other point that I want to make sure that I hit with Tyler is, reading your work, I don't think that you think Vice President Harris is a strong enough candidate to win, unless I'm reading your work wrong.
No, I absolutely think she can win. Right now, she's polling neck and neck with Biden, and it seems like some polls have her slightly ahead. I think she will get a huge boost when she is the nominee, if she is the nominee. That's not to say I think it has to be handed to her. I think, there's a good faith argument to be had about, giving her the reins and the things that make simpler with campaign cash versus having an open convention. But no, I think she can win. As I said earlier, I think we are drastically underpricing the extent to which the American public is desperate for any alternative other than the two old men we have before us. And I think any Democratic candidate is more than capable of energizing across the board. And I would also point out, I think that, that person who made that comment said, how are we going to unite a party that includes figures from Joe Manchin to,
AOC.
AOC, right? And I would point out that, I'm a left-wing Bernie Democrat myself. People on the left of the Democratic Party have been the most enthusiastic voices saying that we should replace Biden with Kamala Harris, who obviously is a candidate who has slightly different politics than my own. So I think the idea that the party is incapable of coming together to try to beat Donald Trump to get behind a candidate who's not going to be wouldn't be everyone's first choice, but who is certainly a preferable alternative to what we have before us. I think that's not giving Democratic voters or the American people enough credit.
Jerry, would you want to see an open convention, or do you think it has to be VP Harris?
I have nothing against VP Harris except her polling numbers. I'm a little worried. I also know that governors end up being really good presidents. And why is that? Because they run a budget. A state is like a mini country. Look at Gavin Newsom. He has run one of the largest economies in the world, California. I think he would come in really strong. My worry with Kamala is there's a lot of sexism out there, and I'm afraid it's Hillary all over again. I'm really worried about that.
You'd feel the same way with Gretchen Whitmer?
I do. I feel like if we need crossover votes, I feel like there is on the other side of the aisle, there's this, resistance to putting a woman in office, especially a woman from the Democratic Party. I've often said to my friends, if we're ever going to have a woman president, and I'm not for a woman president just because she's a woman, it's going to have to probably be someone from the political right. I just think just because of the tunnel vision that we seem to, and I know this is very controversial, but think about this. The average American right now is a 38.1-year-old woman, and we keep on putting two aging white men on the top of the ticket. So there's no enthusiasm there. And I just wanted to use a little bit of President Biden's words. These are quotes that he said. There's three of them. He said, "My father used to have an expression. He'd say, 'Joey, a job is about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. It's about your place in your community.'" And so I think with that quote, he's losing some dignity here in the way he's performing. And then he said, "For too long in this society, we have celebrated unrestrained individualism over common community." And I think he's definitely at risk of that. And then the final thing he said was that if I don't run for president, we'll all be okay. So I think he needs to go back and look at some of his own quotes.
Well, let me turn to Anita with a specific question. Anita keeps saying, no, the reality is it's Biden or the vice president, Vice President Harris, that people need to get religion on that. We're not going to have some sort of open convention. Ezra Klein's dream is not going to happen in August. And I hear you, and I understand pragmatically why. I look at Great Britain, which just had an election, and it took 6 weeks. In Canada, it takes about 9 weeks. We are the country that does this forever, and I don't think we have to be. Why could this not be a hinge point that says this is going to be different this time, and people actually want something different, Anita?
So I am 100% sympathetic with that feeling because I'm a Bernie Democrat, and Biden was not my first pick, and Kamala was not my first pick, and most of the people that I know understand that, unfortunately, these are going to be our two choices because money wins elections. And I'm very sorry to have to, you know, burst everyone's bubble, especially the bubble that says that Biden is uniquely qualified to lead this country or uniquely anything to beat Donald Trump. That's not necessarily true. And I do not agree that Kamala Harris should jump in and take over the presidency. I think that if you think that, and this is no offense to Tyler, I think he made wonderful points, but if you really think that he is in such cognitive decline that he is incapable of currently running, which I will be judicious about not saying anything because I don't know, I'm not his doctor, but I'm seeing what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Then he is probably not the person necessarily making the decisions in the middle of the night. And I think it's fantasy land to think that our elected officials are leaving him in his bedroom with a nuclear football like it's some sort of fairy tale. That is not the case. They knew what they were getting when they put him in office and they have him set up with doctors and they have him set up with, this debate was a disaster. But, you know, the time of day could have dictated whether or not he was doing better. And I think that people in his inner circle know that. And they don't want to see the world go kaboom any more than we do.
So you're saying pragmatically, in the same way that Donald Trump, we found out there were people around Donald Trump who were kind of back channeling with China, with Russia, and basically saying, like, you know, if you got an issue, talk to us.
Yeah.
You think that's happening here?
I believe that. I don't have direct evidence of that, but I think it would be silly to believe otherwise, and especially since, our military readiness is second to none, and it's very, very ready for anything. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
So when I see this situation where people are worried about his cognitive decline, I'm thinking to myself, well, I have to trust that the coalition that he brought in with him and the people who are around him are acting proactively to keep these things from happening. And you can tell the difference between this administration and the Trump administration. In that regard, they were just allowing him to float aimlessly, do whatever he wanted. And I'm sorry, but he is, if you want to talk about cognitive decline, the only reason why you and I know and understand the words or sounds that are coming out of Donald Trump's mouth is because we've been forced to try and decode that broken speech for the last 6 years. And we are now inured to it. Like, we had to learn Trumpish. It's very embarrassing that this nation continues to, and I don't mean to go on a tangent, but continues to allow for this man to have such a low bar for entry on what is considered cognitive ability and hold Joe to a different standard. I'm, like I said, I'm not his biggest fan. And also I do see the signs, but I would trust his coalition and I would trust Kamala more than I would any pick by Donald Trump. And on the point that I'm sorry I didn't get to, which is whether or not she should jump into the presidency.
Yeah.
I disagree with that because A, then she doesn't get the advantage of being able to run unencumbered by Joe Biden's past. He's made some decisions I disagree with, and I think that she has an opportunity to separate herself a little bit and make some daylight between her and her new coalition and Biden and his old guard. And I think that that would be wonderful. Plus, if the Democrats, for 1 second, could figure out how to capture the news cycle using the fanfare of changing to a different candidate and to keep that news cycle, then they could damage the Trump coalition's campaign completely. He's nothing without the news cycle. If they don't keep him on TV, he's forgotten about.
Well, and so let me just jump in and say there's a couple of emails from listeners that I'll get to that are on some of these points coming up here. And listeners, if you do want to jump in, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Let me go ahead and before I turn it over to Dylan, I'll remind you, Dylan Daler is with us, Democratic political consultant. You just heard Anita Smith-Twitchell, who's a former member of Canandaigua City Council and president of Rochester Area Mensa. Jerry Lynn Sparks is a former congressional press secretary, founder of the Ragged Democrats. And on the line with us is Tyler Austin Harper, an assistant professor of environmental studies at Bates College and a contributing writer to The Atlantic. Dylan, in your mind, does it have to be the VP?
I am in full support of Kamala Harris running for president. I don't think that there is a way in the campaign finance world, which I've dealt a lot with, to transfer the – I mean, you would have to refund every donor and then hope that they give you the money for the new candidate. I mean, that would be the only way to do it, and some of that money's already spent. I also think that Kamala Harris is uniquely qualified to bring the case against Donald Trump. We have moved from the 2020 election, where it was, you know, discussions around, COVID and to a extent his ability to be president. And now we are, you know, in a fight for the soul of our democracy. And I think that Kamala Harris is better suited to discuss the criminal cases that are against Donald Trump, to discuss the fight that we have ahead, and honestly, to take him on the debate stage. I was sitting there watching Joe Biden going, man, I really wish that Kamala Harris was up there right now. You know, in the UK, you can sub out. Your prime minister does not have to engage in the debate. They can send somebody else. And I was going, man, I wish that was a political norm here.
Well, I mean, I hear you, and a lot of people may feel that way, but I think Jerry's point is she's worked in Congress. She's worried about winning these swing states, and she understands that maybe those swing voters, you're worried about them voting for VP Harris.
Yes, I am. And also, this is not a time to worry about hurting people's feelings. We're hurting our country, and maybe even more than that. I've been watching Turning Point on Netflix just to look at the historical things that have happened and where fascism rises. A little bit scared. I think we all are. I wanted to do another quote from Joe Biden. He said, Barack Obama is probably the most exciting candidate that either the Democratic or Republican Party has produced, at least since I've been around. He's fresh. He's new. He's insightful. There's nothing, sadly, fresh about Kamala. We already know her. She's a known quantity. She hasn't run a state government. I think Gavin Newsom, because he's from California, is going to get Hollywood money. He is known.
Well, you're the Governor Newsom train, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I lived in California for a decade, too, so I understand that economy
very
well.
But if you're being a pragmatist about VP Harris, why are you not a pragmatist about the swing state voters saying, hey, he's a California governor. I don't want a West Coast governor?
Because I think we could also put on that ticket Whitmer. You got two governors, very strong, very strong. Vice presidents have not fared well when they run for president themselves. I'm being very practical here. And Kamala Harris has a record in California that's not very palatable to a lot of people. There were some things that she did out there in the draconian drug laws and things like that that could really work against her. I also just don't think she's that strong on camera. And that matters. Optics actually matter. And that's, you know, the thing with President Biden, if we're using that metric to say he's not fit to be on the ticket, well, is he still fit to be currently in office? We have to be consistent here. I know that there's a lot of passion around what you're saying about the impracticality of it. I don't listen to that. I listen to where there's a will, there's a way. There's a huge will of the Democratic circles that I'm involved in, and they're all pleading to please switch up this ticket. Give us something like Barack Obama, something fresh, something new, and something insightful.
I mean, I hear that. And so I have to get to the listener feedback here. I want to say, if you're just jumping in and joining us here, I do hear quite a lot of unity. I hear very different views among the panelists. I hear a lot of unity, though, that whatever happens, there will be a coalescing. On one side, you've got, you know, sort of pragmatist Dylan's talking about the money, and Anita's talking about just functionally how you would go to anybody but the vice president, and they don't believe it could happen. Jerry is saying, Tyler Austin Harper is saying, there is so much thirst and appetite for this to happen that you would see money, you would see coverage. Nate Cohn today from the New York Times said, forget any polling right now about anybody who's not Joe Biden, because it would all change overnight if you saw this actually move in this direction. So that's where things are. I'm going to start with an email from Greg. Greg says, Evan, if I admit that the polls favor Trump, will you all admit something too? You should be willing to admit that by focusing on Biden's age, you are distracting from what the real conversation should be, which is the threat of Trump. The polls are just a product of the obsession with Biden and the free pass that you are all giving Trump. That is from Greg. All right, Tyler Austin Harper, you're giving Trump a free pass, he says. Why are you talking about Biden's cognitive decline?
Okay, well, the first thing I would say is that Biden has been losing this election for a full year now. He's been bleeding minority voters, which are absolutely crucial to his reelection campaign, for a year. He's been down in swing states for a year. Biden has been losing this election since well before this debate and the landslide of media attention on his age. So that would be my first point. The second point is that Trump voters are clearly immovable. That's been basically the case since 2016. He has not bled. He has a core base of support that's not going anywhere. The reason there's so much attention on Biden right now is that everyone, including people in the media, know that if the New York Times calls for Trump to step down because he's cognitively unfit and a danger to democracy, both of which are true, he's not going to do so, and none of his voters are going to expect him to. The difference is that Democrat voters are, I think more willing to think about the best interests of the country and to think about the possibility that we might need to, not be a cult of personality and think about who's the best for the job. I have little patience with the blame the media narrative. I really do think it is sort of out of the Trump playbook. Another thing I would add is that there has been tons of attention to Trump's unique unfitness for office. The media has covered Trump obsessively since 2016. The Atlantic did an entire issue devoted to the peril of a Trump 2025, inauguration. And so the idea that the media is giving Trump a free pass while uniquely blasting Biden, I think is just entirely fanciful. It is often a product of people just not paying attention.
I would say to Greg, I mean, as I guess a member of the media establishment, I'm going to agree with Tyler there. I don't think there's any American who isn't aware of whatever they might think it's a narrative. If you're a Trump voter, you think, well, that's the narrative. But Donald Trump is, he's a good businessman. He's smart. He's strong. He's a powerful leader. And part of the challenge right now Democrats are having is, to Greg's point, Greg wants it pointed out that Donald Trump is declining himself. But when he stands next to Joe Biden, that advantage the Democrats could have in pointing that out is really lost, because there is that difference and he looks perhaps a lot more vigorous and maybe even with it. So, I mean, I hear you, Greg. I don't necessarily agree with you, but I'm listening. Dylan, what do you think? Is this an unfair focus on Biden?
I don't. I am more worried to see and to echo some past points that part of the Democratic coalition has turned on the fourth estate. I think that we took a lot. I mean, a lot of the things that we're hearing out of the Biden White House right now, we were more than receptive to when it was the same situation in the Trump White House and it was anonymous sources. And I'm worried Twitter isn't real life, but I'm worried that I see people on Twitter saying, this isn't real. The media is against us. I saw something going around saying, look at all these media CEOs who donate to Trump. And it's not true. A bunch of them are Biden donors. It's worrisome to see that happen. And I think that this isn't the media manufacturing it. I think that people are genuinely worried about our democracy and is Joe Biden the best person to beat Trump?
Anita?
Yeah, so I think that it's important that we always hold our media to the standards that we would for any company, because we have to remember these are corporations, and the interest of a corporation is different than the interest of a run-of-the-mill Biden or Trump supporter. These are people, and they are in possession of a safely guarded and very precious commodity, which is the truth. And they can manufacture that truth. If we're not careful, they will manufacture a truth that we will all have to live with that is not true. And so I think in a way, yes, we should be a bit antagonistic toward the Fourth Estate. I think that they need to be held to account, because in this country we have the unfortunate situation where they are monetized. Most of them are monetized. And so when you say, oh, well, some of them are Biden supporters or Trump supporters, that's irrelevant. They are supporting whatever makes the corporation more money. So, I mean, does that sound conspiratorial? I'm sorry, I'm just seeing a pattern of where the money goes. That's where power flows. And I think that we need to avail ourselves from any other sort of thought process on this. We need to be awake and aware that CNN now has a CEO who is a Trump supporter. And I mean, and Elon Musk used to be what, left-leaning, now he's right-leaning, now he's whatever. It's the same thing. They go where the money is. So, but I think that we're ignoring something that's very important, and that is Black women built the Democratic Party, and they continue to build the Democratic Party, and we ignore them to our own peril. I heard this talk about, you know, getting somebody else in there, and not only is that, you know, ahistorical to try and choose somebody who is not the, you know, vice president. I'm not saying it has to be, but I am saying that it would be unprecedented. It would be a snub. And I do feel like that we would lose more support than we would gain from that. And I'd be interested in Tyler's thoughts on that. But I really think that suggesting Gavin Newsom, another old white man.
He's not an old white man.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I got him mixed up. Excuse me. Choosing Gavin Newsom over Kamala Harris would be a snub. And I know you want to jump in, but we're in a situation where we can't afford to lose the legs out from this entire operation. And I defy you to find a more loyal base than women of color in this country.
Well, let me get Tyler and then Jerry in there. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, you know, I would say I will be careful, I guess, in my own thinking about using the word snub, insofar as I agree with a logistical point that I think Kamala is the most practical option. I don't think I don't think it's inherently a snub or somehow racist or problematic not to choose her if there's a better candidate. But it's not clear to me that Newsom is overwhelmingly a better candidate. And I do agree that the optics are tough, is how I would put it, of replacing one Black female California Democrat who is currently the vice president with another white male one. And I'm not sure that I fully see the rationale for that choice. I also think Kamala is, you know, her policies on crime and her background as a prosecutor were not the most popular in 2020. I think we're in a very different moment right now in terms of, you know, how Democrats and progressive folks are thinking about, you know, crime across the country. And I think, you know, particularly given Donald Trump's felony convictions, she's well suited to make a strong case for herself. So if the Democrats were to have an open convention and it was somebody other than Kamala ends up being the nominee, you know, I don't think that's a snub, but I do think moving immediately to someone like Gavin Newsom over Kamala certainly would be, and I don't think would ingratiate the Democrats to that crucial Black woman coalition. For
okay,
sure.
Jerry?
There's so much to say here. So I don't think Kamala is a horrible candidate. I just don't think she's exciting anybody. And her numbers right now, like you said, the polls right now don't matter. Maybe it would be exciting, but I don't think she's fresh and new. We already know. And that's what I'm worried about. And, you know, getting back to whether Biden should step aside now, on the George Stephanopoulos interview, they asked Biden if he had watched the debate, and he couldn't remember if he had watched the debate. And that frightened me terribly. I also think that this race, this presidential race, should not be about race itself. And Kamala Harris, I don't think that the Black women, you know, voters are going to vote for Trump. But I don't want to, you know, also just have it be a slap in the face, like you said. I certainly value that part of the electorate. I think that there's so much more at stake here than hurting people's feelings. We have to put forth the best ticket. And I was go ahead.
Well, I just want to ask you a question.
Yes.
You've worked in Congress. You understand how campaigns look.
Yes.
You understand how public perception is, right? So what Tyler is talking about with the 2020 campaign that Kamala Harris ran, that ultimately flopped before she even could win a primary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Democrats didn't want her to be the president, to say nothing of Republicans who may have either valid or invalid reasons to oppose her. However, the point I'm keying in on this, point I'm keying in on is this. Tyler is saying that her record as a DA, as a prosecutor, was not popular with the political left, especially in the immediate aftermath of George Floyd and
right.
other events. And a lot has changed. The difference is, Jerry, if you read Dana Goodyear's work on Kamala Harris, there's probably no journalist who's covered Kamala Harris more than Dana Goodyear. And Dana Goodyear points this out. She's a bad politician because she doesn't really understand how to triangulate what she thinks the public wants to hear versus what her record has been and what she really believes in. So as a result, when she had the lead in the fall of 2019, it fell apart on her. She did not connect with voters. She started to disavow her own positions. And it was not clear if she was disavowing them for political reasons or because that's who she was. She was changing. So now she'd have to reestablish who she is. Is she more of the kind of the person who's trying to be representative of all sort of backgrounds, as she often is when she takes people on tours of the East Wing? Or is she the tough on crime prosecutor that might endear her to the political middle if they listen? I don't know the answer to that. Do you feel like you know enough to say?
Well, it's the old definition of insanity, which is just doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. She already has run for president. It didn't go well. She was not well-liked. I don't think that she's going to magically become well-liked. And this race should not be close. We have Trump as a candidate. And the only reason it's close is because the two people on the ticket are not excitable.
Tyler's argument, though, is that anybody who's not Biden or Trump is going to energize people. Kamala Harris included.
I don't think enough people are going to switch from the Republican moderate women that we need. I was just in Boston, and I went to the Tea Party Museum there, and I took my son, who's in grad school, and we were talking about it afterwards. You know, no taxation without representation. And I really don't feel like anything that's on either ticket right now is really representative of the majority of people. There's no excitement in this ticket as a whole. And the other side deserves better, too. This ticket on both sides sucks.
If you don't mind me saying, I'm going to have to say that Tyler had a good point on, of course, that any candidate could excite because it's going to be energizing. I think that we should... I think that it is a fantasy to think that there's going to be enough money and enough time to bring in somebody who is not in the Biden administration like Kamala Harris is, and convince the American people that this complete, and I'm sorry, I know that you know who Gavin Newsom is, but most Americans probably do not. The name recognition is just simply not there. And once they hear he's from California, you lose like 10% right off the top. I'm sorry, that's just how it is.
He will have enough money, though.
East Coast, and you can say that, yeah, and maybe he will, but I mean, you know who had a lot of money? I mean, a lot of people had a lot of money going into this last race.
He's a governor. He knows how to do this.
Sorry, I don't want to pick on your, you know, if you like him, that's fine, but I'm not Kay Hive. It's not like I'm excited about, you know, getting Kamala Harris in. I really liked Bernie Sanders, but she's also a listener. She's also the kind of person who can give Joe his flowers and send him potentially on his way by saying, thank you, I appreciate you, blah, blah, blah. And then the fanfare comes when we do give him his flowers. When, as Democrats, we say, thank you, Joe, you did the right thing, yada, yada. And he says, Kamala, here's the torch. Everybody cries. It's fanfare. There's, you know, we're sending off a president. You can create that narrative if you have the brains. I'm sorry, the Democratic Party just does not know how to seize the moment when it is handed to them on a silver platter.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. Real quick, I want to hear one comment from Dylan on the question. He's the youngest voter here. And we're not going to essentialize age here. You can't speak for all young voters, Dylan. But are you worried about Joe Biden energizing the youth vote, which right now polls are bad for Biden with young voters?
And you're going to hear this a lot leading up to the election. This is not an election between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. This is an election between Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and staying home.
Mm-hmm.
We are not going to get 100% turnout. We had historically high turnout because we had mail-in voting in 2020. I don't think that young people are going to overwhelmingly swing towards Trump. I've seen some polls that suggest that. I don't see it happening. I do see young people staying home more than they did, and I don't think that Joe Biden is the right candidate to really energize them in the way that we've seen past candidates.
So there's a danger of apathy.
Yeah.
Okay. To the phones we go. Ingrid in Penfield. Hello, Ingrid. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I am sorry to have missed most of your conversation. You may have talked about this already, which would make me thank my lucky stars. I doubt it, though. This is a mess we're in. I appreciate that everyone's talking about it. Okay, I'm nervous to say this, but I'm going to do it. There's one person in this country who would win with a sweep and would pick up centrists and everybody else, and that is someone who doesn't want to run. Can't you get her to run? Michelle Obama is who we need. I'm not joking, though.
I know.
Is there
I know.
Any way it can happen?
Ingrid, I appreciate that. I think the answer is no. Everything I've read indicates that she guards their privacy. She appreciates retirement. And I don't want to, I'm not dismissing your desire or the substance of what you think would be really, really strong there. I just, the reason we're not spending time on it is I don't think there's anything that has even a tiny crack of a door open there. So I appreciate that, but I don't necessarily see anything that indicates that's possible. Jim and Gates. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Jim and Gates here. And I just wanted to bring in a consideration I haven't heard discussed yet, and that is the fact of disabilities. Our president, Joe Biden, he has a disability, and his disability is with articulating. He has a speech impediment, and, you know, it troubled him much when he was a young man. And I see, as an older man, it's coming back. It does not indicate a cognitive decline. It's a disability. So I would think that all the liberals out there would have a little consideration for those of us with disabilities and not make us ineligible for public office because we happen to have a speech impediment.
Jim, I appreciate the phone call. Maybe the biggest critic of Biden in this way, the cognitive decline, has been Tyler. Tyler, he says that is you're being unfair to a man with a stutter.
Yeah, so I would say that this Biden stutter is clearly not the issue, and I don't think the great bulk of Americans who reacted poorly to that debate saw a man with a stutter. They saw a man with obvious cognitive decline. And to be honest, you know, I know people with stutters, and I find it vaguely offensive that, and not the caller is not being offensive, but the narrative that this is just a stutter. Stuttering does not impact your ability to think or form coherent thoughts. Biden answered a question about abortion by evoking an immigrant who had murdered a woman. He talked about sister-on-sister rape. He did not sound like a man in command of his faculties. It is not the issue I have, and I think most Americans have, was not that he's a little slower and that his movements are a little slower and that he doesn't speak quite as well as he used to. It's that he fundamentally doesn't make sense. And when I say he doesn't make sense, I don't mean that we can't understand him or it takes him a little bit to get his words out, but rather that the ideas he's stringing together often seem incoherent in a way that doesn't inspire confidence that he's, you know, he has the command of his faculties that he needs to lead this country.
Okay. Anybody disagree in studio? Anybody feel like we're being anti-disability here?
No, I have a disability. Oh, excuse me.
Go ahead, too.
Go ahead, Anita.
So we both have disabilities.
Well, my son
does.
Oh, excuse me. All right. Well, I'm visually impaired. And I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be a baseball player. If you can't do it, you can't do it. I'm not saying necessarily he can't, wink, wink, but, you know, that's what it looks like.
Dylan?
You know, I think, I am friends with a lot of disabled people who are in politics, and we had a lively conversation during the debate about this. I'm disabled, and I said the number one thing that worried me is that if the issue was his stutter, that the team did not build in the proper accommodations that would be needed. I mean, Trump was anytime, anywhere, anyway. And the fact that they wouldn't have done that was worrisome, but I don't blame it. As time has gone on, I don't blame it on his team. I don't think he has dementia. I don't think that he's sundowning. I think that those are false narratives. I think he's an 81-year-old man. And I think that I would love for the president to be disabled and I don't think that this is his disability.
Okay. Jerry?
We are hearing reports that President Biden is best between 10 and 4. He couldn't remember on George Stephanopoulos if he had even watched the debate, playbacked him, and that was a week later, so it wasn't like a length of time. That has nothing to do with stutter. I am the mother of a son with significant disabilities. I live almost all of my day thinking about the advocacy of people for disabilities. So to your caller, I appreciate the point, but this panel clearly is very, in support and advocating for people with disabilities. I also would like to say one more quote from Joe Biden, if I may get it in. He said, "A gaffe in Washington is someone telling the truth, and telling the truth has never hurt me." So I'm saying to President Biden, thank you so much for your service to this country. The truth is, your service to this country has now reached its apex, and it's time for the love of country to let a stronger candidate take over.
Music's going to play. We've reached the end of the hour, so I'm just going to ask guests yes or no. Is Joe Biden going to be off the ticket?
Yes.
Dylan?
Yes.
Tyler says yes. Dylan?
I am 50-50.
Okay, Anita, what do you think?
I'm going to go with probably.
Probably. Okay.
What about you, Evan?
No. I said in 2016 that Marco Rubio was the obvious next president. I have retired from any prognostic. Anybody who thinks I have anything of wisdom here? I've got nothing to add.
Thank you very much, Evan. I hope I'm brought back.
Oh, Anita, thank you very much. Anita Smith-Twitchell, Dylan Daler, Jerry Lynn Sparks all in studio. Thank you all for being here. Tyler Austin Harper, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
And listeners, we've got more connections coming up in just a moment.